Donald Trump has branded himself as the ultimate self-made billionaire. But New York's attorney general says his success was built on lies. The state is suing the former U.S. president, his family business, and his children for financial fraud. Trump's dismissed the lawsuit as a witch hunt. So will his latest legal woes weaken or cement his political standing? I'm Imran Khan, and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. Let's bring in our guests in London, Greg Swenson, chairman of Republican Overseas UK. In Washington, D.C., Melanie Sloan, partner at Summer Strategies and a former federal prosecutor. And in Birmingham, UK, Scott Lucas, a professor of international politics at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. A welcome to you all. I want to begin in Washington, D.C. with Melanie Sloan. This is a civil lawsuit. It's not a criminal one. However, is there a smoking gun here? Is there something that could put Donald Trump in and his family in real difficulty?
Well, from the former president's perspective, this may be the most troubling investigation that he has to deal with. He's facing the possibility of being barred from real estate in New York for 5 years and having the leadership of the Trump Organization taken away from him. So I'm sure he's quite worried about that. In addition, this case has also been referred to the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York and the Internal Revenue Service. There's the possibility of tax fraud, the sheer number of allegations of improper valuation of his properties could well have serious tax consequences for the former president.
But Melanie, this is all just part of the rough and tumble of, you know, New York real estate. I mean, I can't imagine real estate vendor, somebody in that business. I mean, honesty isn't a word we associate with those people. This is just business of the day, isn't it?
I think that's going to be a tough argument for Mr. Trump to make. In his deposition earlier this year, he took the Fifth Amendment and in a huge number of times when asked about the valuation of his properties. And that will be used in any kind of trial where there will be a strong inference of guilt in that case for taking the Fifth. That wouldn't happen in a criminal trial, but in a civil trial, it does. So there will be the inference that he indeed knew that he was misvaluing the properties, which will contribute to a finding of guilt. Obviously, he will argue that there was no intent to defraud, but and the fact that he has no email, very rarely emails, will obviously help him, because the government will need to show that he had the intent to defraud. But again, there is a plethora of evidence lined up against him. This is a very long civil complaint, but we are still at the beginning of this process. Undoubtedly, Mr. Trump will be filing a motion to dismiss, and we will see how it goes. But he also is facing additional jeopardy from this investigation, as I said, because it has been referred to criminal authorities as well.
Well, let me bring in Greg Swenson here in London. You're the chairperson of the Republicans Overseas. There's a litany of charges, not just this one, but there's a litany of cases being brought against Donald Trump. How can you still defend him?
Well, I'm not sure I'd defend the president on any of these individual cases, you know, on their own. I think there's a long history of this. I mean, it's really been going on for 6 years. Specifically with Tish James, it's been going on for 3 years. So, I mean, there might have been some disappointment that she wasn't able to come up with a criminal case, nor was the Manhattan DA able to come up with a criminal case. So I think that might have been a disappointment. But this is a, you know, on top of, you know, what started in 2016 with the Russia collusion hoax, many people seemed very confident that that would, you know, in some way end the president's political career. And it turned out to be a hoax. So, you know, it's a long list. I probably would argue the one that's most worrying to the president is the mishandling of classified documents. Not that, you know, I have a view on whether that will work or not, but it's another case in the long list of attempts to criminalize President Trump. I'm not sure this one will work. I doubt it will. And, you know, if you look at what happened at the raid at Mar-a-Lago, I'm not sure what the intentions were, but, you know, the president was up 9 points over Ron DeSantis, 45 to 36, prior to the raid. And after the raid, the first poll came out with Trump up 39. So if anything, it probably generates some sympathy for the president. I'm sure he will not do well in Manhattan. I think there's plenty of support for Tish James in Manhattan. But if you look at the other boroughs, they're really concerned about crime in the city and the lack of prosecution by Tish James. And I think there'll be some disappointment, especially amongst the minority communities who are the ones suffering from the crime wave. And if anything, this is a distraction away from the real, you know, the real issues that are important to New Yorkers. So who knows what will happen in terms of the civil case. But I'm not confident it's really going to hurt the president that much.
We'll come to Scott Lucas now, who's in Birmingham. Scott, is this a case of Teflon Don, the fact that nothing can touch him and it's just a distraction?
Well, it's a case of making sure that we cut through politics and disinformation. And like Melanie did, stick with the facts. First of all, the wider context is that Donald Trump may have escaped justice, but he, in fact, or his campaign, did collaborate with Russia in 2016 to get him elected. That is on the record in the Mueller report. Donald Trump tried to blackmail a country, Ukraine, a country which is now at war, so because it would not spread disinformation against his opponent in the 2020 election, Joe Biden. Donald Trump is facing civil and criminal investigations over his attempts to overturn the 2020 election. He is facing investigation over his possible incitement of violence in the Capitol attack, and he is facing the multiple financial cases. Contrary to what Greg said, this was not a political campaign by the New York State Attorney General, Letitia James. It was a legal case based upon a great deal of evidence obtained despite years of Trump trying to block those documents being provided. Contrary to what Greg said, the Manhattan criminal investigation is not over. They have decided not to go to the grand jury for the moment, but the impact, as Melanie said, is that the findings in the James investigation, the civil investigation, having been handed over to the Manhattan district attorney, may mean that they now renew going to the grand jury. I'm not talking here about political pro-Trump or anti-Trump. I'm talking here about the operation of the U.S. legal system. And the danger here is that politics and disinformation is not just a case of saving Trump or defending him, Teflon Don. It's undermining the U.S. system, which has to continue after he is gone one day, whether it's behind bars or somewhere else.
Well, let's bring in Melanie Sloan here. Melanie, it is very difficult to separate the politics from the investigations here. As a former federal prosecutor, when you're talking about high-profile cases like this, how much of the politics of this are you aware of, and how much does that influence you?
Well, obviously, the politics are very significant in that Mr. Trump is going on television and insisting that if anybody goes after him, any prosecutors take on cases, they're facing potential mob violence. So he's trying to bring in his supporters to stop any kind of criminal case, which, as Scott said, that would just be anti-democratic. I mean, we're facing really a crisis in our democracy. The thought that there would be mob rule to stop a viable prosecution is a terrifying thing. I want to correct something that Greg said earlier, which was that Tish James didn't bring a criminal investigation, suggesting that somehow she didn't have the evidence for that. She didn't have the jurisdiction to bring a criminal inquiry, a criminal charge here. That's not her role at the Attorney General's office. So she's not the person for that. Her office is not the right office. There is, however, another important criminal case going to trial shortly, which is against the Trump Organization for a conspiracy and all sorts of criminal violations. And Alan Weisberg, the former chief financial officer of the Trump Organization, who had to plead guilty earlier this year to criminal charges, is set to testify in that case. And so we should expect to see some very interesting information coming out about potential fraud at the Trump Organization coming from his testimony. So that, too, is yet another sense where Mr. Trump is facing legal jeopardy. And of course, don't forget, he also is facing state investigation in Georgia over the calls to Brad Raffensperger and the attempt to quote, find votes in Georgia. And then there is also the Justice Department's January 6th inquiry, which remains ongoing, as the also the House of Representatives is conducting a parallel investigation into January 6th and Mr. Trump's role in inciting the insurrection.
Greg, at what point do the Republicans just turn around and say, you know what, there are too many legal cases here, there's too much smoke, go away, deal with all of this, and stop trying to lead and be the senior, most famous Republican on the planet? It's not helping us.
Yeah, that's a great question, Imran. And there's a significant number of Republicans that would prefer that someone else runs in 2024, you know, for a number of reasons. One is that the president will be 78 years old on Election Day. The other is he can only serve one term. And I think there's a lot of scar tissue in the party about the special elections in Georgia. You know, Melanie mentioned the Georgia election. You know, that was really disappointing to many of us in the party that, you know, that the president was too focused on his own, you know, his own ego or looking back at the November 2020 election instead of focusing on the special election, which cost the Republicans the Senate. So, you know, there is some scar tissue there. As I mentioned before, there was a movement and a gradual narrowing in the polls between Trump and specifically Ron DeSantis, but also Trump and the other potential candidates, you know, up until the raid at Mar-a-Lago. And that actually, if the intention was to draw attention to Trump, to elevate him in the polls, it worked. If the intention was to never have Trump be president again, I think it backfired. So, look, I think we have to remember that the audience in America, the voters, are often will see these things as witch hunts. I know that's the term that the president uses. I'm not necessarily agreeing with him, but this is, you know, the last of a long list of assaults or attempts to defame the president. That's again started with the Russia collusion hoax. Scott and I, I'm sure, will always disagree on this, but you know, much of this information is coming out currently. You know that it was fabricated by the Hillary Clinton campaign with the support of the FBI.
And so, that's wrong. Yeah, please that's flat out wrong.
Scott, happy to stick to facts. I'd love to have a reunion. I'd love to have a reunion with all the people who were telling me in 2018 that he'd colluded with the Russians and that this was all.
Let's get Scott's reaction. I'll bring you both in again.
Let me give you the facts.
I'm always amused, Greg, by Scott's reaction.
Let me give you the facts, Greg. The Mueller report finds that there is ongoing contact and collaboration between the Trump campaign and the Russians throughout 2016, both through members of the campaign and informal important advisors like Roger Stone. The Mueller investigation finds that collaboration included the dumps over Hillary Clinton's emails that had been stolen by the Russians. The Mueller report finds that on at least eight occasions, there is substantial evidence that Trump either obstructed justice or attempted to obstruct justice. The only reason why Trump was not prosecuted under the Mueller report was not because it was a hoax, but because Mueller was told by the Justice Department, you do not have jurisdiction to indict a sitting president. The only reason why that happened. And as for your disinformation, that there was a Democratic plot that goes on, that is part of the discredited Durham investigation, which after years of wasting taxpayers' money, brings a couple of minor cases that yield no results and is now being shut down. So let's stick with the fact. This is not denigrating, defaming
Scott,
Donald Trump.
Before we get bogged down in the details
of all of this, and it is fascinating, but I want to keep us on topic. I want to bring in Melanie here. All of this, it just goes to show you how remarkably political all of this is. We're arguing about, you know, what facts were, who did what, you know, and how difficult then is it for somebody like James to bring the civil lawsuit in this atmosphere?
I think there is, of course, concern about the politics, but we are a country that is based on the rule of law, and it can't be that prosecutors and people in authority over our criminal and civil laws simply look aside while Trump violates all of our laws and do nothing simply because there are so many people who will support him no matter what he does. As he very famously said, he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. And that was years ago he said that. And it's, that's clearly true. It's, there is literally nothing that his supporters wouldn't back him for doing. I mean, I don't know if many of your viewers would have heard this, but last night, Mr. Trump very crazily said on the Sean Hannity last night on an interview that he could have declassified those documents that were at Mar-a-Lago just by thinking about it. And if he just thought that they were declassified, that would constitute declassification, as if somehow that is a real, something could do such a thing. And I'm sure that millions of Americans will say, sure, if he just thinks about declassification, that's okay. But that doesn't mean prosecutors can look aside while Mr. Trump violates rules of law. And they have to do their jobs, even if Mr. Trump sadly did not do his.
Greg, I want to bring you back in here. Whatever you think of these cases, whether you think they're a political witch hunt, whether you think they're not, all of them are incredibly difficult to prosecute. All of them are fraught with having to gather evidence against somebody who obfuscates and actually downright lies about things and often contradicts himself. Here in this particular case, this civil lawsuit, we are having prosecutors are very concerned that the emails just aren't there to actually prosecute this case. That's a big challenge for them. But the other challenge for them is Trump's legal team. Trump has stiffed many, many, many lawyers. He doesn't have the kind of high-profile legal team that he's going to need for this, right?
No, I would agree with that, Imran. I mean, the president has a habit of you know, sort of self-destructing with some of his bravado, and it is difficult for people to work for him that the turnover is high. So, you know, I'd have to agree with that. It doesn't, you know, so it's really hard to anticipate the outcomes of these things. But I think there should just be a little compassion for the voters who have seen this go on for a long time. And yes, Melanie's right. There are a number of Republicans who are supportive of the president no matter what. But they're also seeing, you know, Scott mentioned disinformation or misinformation. We hear that word a lot. And these are the same voters, though, who saw, you know, for example, the Hunter Biden laptop that was basically censored by Facebook and Twitter in October of 2020. And look, Scott, you might not agree with me or not. I mean, you might agree with
it's
me or not.
It's a diversion, Greg. It has nothing to do with this. It's a diversion.
Right. But that's what voters see.
Else.
And they see that...
You,
post-election.
Because you put it out there. Because you put it out there. Stop doing it.
17% of the voters would not have voted for if they had known about the disinformation, you know, that or what was called disinformation by the 50, you know, former FBI or justice professionals. So, look, this has gone on for a long, you know, for 6 years. It probably peaked in, you know, in the fall of 2020. So, you know, look, that's just, you know, I think there has to be some understanding that voters are seeing disinformation from both sides, and that's
it's
troubling.
A strong word. And disinformation is a very, very strong word, Greg.
And it
is a very strong word that you're using there, but let me just, Greg, just give me a second. It's a very strong word you're using there, disinformation. You're also saying that this is coming to a peak. But there are several lawsuits, there are several investigations open into Donald Trump. I'm going to ask all three of you the same question. I'll begin with Scott first. Scott, this is the president of the United States of America. The fact that this is happening to him, is it a damning indictment of the problems of US democracy, or is it a praiseworthy thing that the US democracy system is doing?
It's a damning indictment of the man who is under investigation for his business and financial practices. But even more importantly, as Melanie highlighted, it is a critical moment for the US system. It's a critical moment for the authority of the US system, its legal system foremost, but also its political system, which is that any person in the United States, even a former president, must be accountable, must be able to be investigated by the law, that no person should be able to trample upon the legal system or to corrupt the political system to avoid investigation, to avoid prosecution, and, if found guilty, to avoid responsibility.
Melanie, we are running out of time, and I do want to come to our other guests as well. Melanie, the same question to you. Is it a damning indictment or is it praiseworthy?
I agree with everything Scott said. I think it is what we have seen is that the court system has been the last bulwark of democracy. While so much has not worked, that Trump has been able to trample on so many of the norms of our democratic system and has really brought us to a precipice, we are seeing that the legal system is the bulwark in protecting us. For example, with the 11th Circuit coming out with the opinion yesterday saying that indeed the FBI investigation can continue into the classified information, and even the judge that Mr. Trump himself picked to be the special master not taking his side in that. So we are seeing that the legal system is protecting us, and hopefully it will stand.
Greg, the same question to you. Witch hunts, or is this justice doing her job?
Well, I would say it's praiseworthy. I mean, if the institutions work and it's fair and balanced, and they, you know, will charge, you know, Democrats as well as Republicans, if they suspect there's a crime, go ahead, bring it on. I think the institutions will work, and they will outlive all the drama that we're seeing right now. But remember, Tish James ran, her basic campaign strategy was, I'm going to get Trump. So it's hard to separate the politics. I wish that she would focus as much attention on looking after the minority communities in the four boroughs outside of Manhattan who are suffering the worst from the surge in crime, thanks to prosecutors like Tish James.
Well, we are going to be looking at this a lot. Scott, I do see you shaking your head there very, very quickly because we are running out of time. Why are you shaking your head?
Because you don't praise the legal system and say it must be upheld and then launch an ad hominem attack on the New York Attorney General for doing the job of trying to see that justice is served. That's irresponsible. And I do hope Greg doesn't try that again.
Well, I want to thank all our guests in London, Greg Svensson, in Washington, D.C., Melanie Sloan, and in Birmingham, UK, Scott Lucas. That's it for the Inside Story podcast. This episode was produced by Kelvin N., Cara Legg, Ben Clark, and Gemma Harris. Studio sound was done by Santil Marimutu, and the program was edited by Ahmed Atfaga, Lynn Enwin, and Joe DeFrias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. And thank you for listening. We'll be back again on Friday.